We know there's power in our numbers. We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C., not extremist Bernie Moreno. If elected, Moreno could make the Radical Project 2025 playbook a reality, endangering our democracy and our hard-won rights and freedoms. Together, we can stop Moreno and his allies from reversing everything our ancestors fought for: Social Security, voting rights, and more. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community, capping the price of life-saving drugs like insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in Black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community, capping the price of insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in Black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
It's time for this week's Wrestling Perspective podcast. In a couple minutes, Jeff Jarrett will join us. Until then, Lars Fredrickson, myself, Dennis Farrell, we're going to read your emails. Lars, what's been going on?
Not a whole lot. I mean, I obviously went to the Royal Rumble, which was very entertaining. You know, it was, if I never have to see a Mountain Dew glow-in-the-dark match again, I will be a happy man. I actually went to the bathroom. I was like, what am I watching? But yeah, the Rumble was great. Hanging out with my good friends, Rob Naylor and Will Helmick, and old tape trader buddies of mine. And we just had an awesome weekend, you know?
That was actually one of our questions, because I guess the rumor out there, and I don't remember who asked it, but I'm going to kind of bring it up now and, you know, bring us into the email segment is, would you be mad if WWE started kind of sponsoring out different matches for different pay-per-views? Like, I think there was a rumor that there was a Cinnamon Toast Crunch match coming up.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I don't really believe what I see on the internet so much anymore, just because, and especially with the wrestling stuff, it's, you know, next thing you know,
WWE's. You're kind of there firsthand and seeing it firsthand, though. So,
yeah, I mean,
friends of somebody that's been involved in things.
Yeah, but a Cinnamon Toast Crunch match, like who, what is that? It's like anybody can make anything for the internet these days. I mean, until you see it with your own eyes, you know, that old saying, like I said, is believe half of what you see and nothing of what you hear. So,
Would you be mad if it was would you be mad if it was like Sasser Banks versus Bailey, sponsored by Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
I don't really care. I mean,
I don't either.
You know, wrestlers got to make their money, and wrestling companies have to make their money. And honestly, if you have to figure out different ways to make money to pay your talent, then I say go for it. I mean, if anybody really would complain about that, I mean, it's like, what would be the, I mean, I don't understand the basis of the complaint, honestly.
I think it's that whole sellout, you know, why do we have to put sponsorships on everything? Like, you gotta make
the sellout. How does that even apply to pro wrestling? It doesn't apply to anything, honestly. And it's like a way to demonize or make something bad. You know, if something, you know, there are situations where I feel like, you know, and there's been instances of, you know, artists or people or whatever it is flipping the script like overnight. Well, the WWE has been money hungry since the very fucking word go. So like calling them sellouts or it's ridiculous. That's just ridiculous.
Well, if you want to get your questions answered, wrestlingperspective@gmail.com, feel free to email us. Nathan says, who was the one friend in your life that got you hooked on wrestling?
Andy Finney. Andy Finney. He was from Detroit, Michigan. And his family moved to Campbell, California. And he was an older gentleman. And that's when I first saw it.
Mine was Ellenwood, Georgia, Jeremy Woods. I wish I knew where he was. Hey, internet fans out there, go find him for me. Is that how that works? But he was a WCW guy, and that's where my love of WCW came from. And usually, you know, we were broke back then. So, but he would get all the videotapes. What was it? 3 weeks after the pay-per-views came out. Yeah. So we would do these slumber parties, and we'd have the foam belts and the foam Legion of Doom shoulder pads, and we'd watch the old WCW pay-per-views. I think that was, you know, where my love from the whole Black Scorpion storyline came from, and from just the Halloween Havocs. That guy right there was who got me hooked on it. Let's see here. Mike Rowe from New Jersey wants to know if you could change. Mike Rowe from New Jersey wants to know, does AEW have too many championships?
I don't know. I guess that's a good question. I've never really thought about it. I just remember the NWA back in the day having a lot of championships and a lot of, but then again, it was also, you know, a territory. This is the Crockett Promotions. I mean, you would see champions and championships coming through in and out of that door. So Mid-South, you know, I mean, there was the trios. They did any, was it NWA, three-man tag champs, the trip, what did they call it back in the day? I forgot.
I don't even know what they called it back then.
Well, because the Russians were the three-man tag champs, and they had the tag team champs, the United States heavyweight title, or television championship, world heavyweight champion. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't think titles are bad. I don't think having too many of them is bad. I think making them mean something is the hard part, you know? And I feel like AEW does that. They really try to make their championships mean something. So I'll give them that.
That's tough with WWE, because you have, I don't know if the two brands are still split or if they're bringing them back together. Shit, I don't know anymore. But you have NXT, but essentially you have three world champions under one company. I don't like that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that gets a little annoying, but I feel like they have a lot of talent and they have to kind of split the shows and do all this stuff, and I get all that. But the one thing I will say, it's and something I've been seeing on the internet, so whether it's true or not, is, you know, Cody possibly, you know, bringing back the winged eagle belt, right? So I would like to see that. I definitely like to see those, I mean, those modern day belts, they look like dog shit. I mean, they're terrible. They look like a belt. It's like a huge belt buckle, you know? It's like when you go down to Texas, down near a rodeo, and the belt buckles are like this big, you know? That's what it looks like to me. It looks like a belt buckle. It doesn't look like a championship belt. It doesn't, I don't know. It had its coolness for a moment. I did think it was kind of neat at first, but now I'm just like, let's do something. I mean, and I understand they were trying to do something a little different.
The only good thing that came out of it was that they made the women's championships kind of an equal size to the men's, because I always thought it was a little bit corny when the women come out with these little bitty, it almost looked like brooches or pins for championship belts. And you're like, what is this? There's no, I don't know, gravitas to the belt. It doesn't come out and doesn't sparkle and make you go, I want that.
Yeah. You would think that that it would be the same size, just as ornate, you know? I mean, I don't know. I a belt's a belt, really. It doesn't matter who's wearing it. They should kind of be uniform, I think, in a sense, you know?
Well, here's a question. This comes from Gene from Three Falls Band. Gene wants to know, have you met or know any other musicians that love wrestling as much as you guys do? Love the pod. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few out there. I remember Chad from Newfound Glory really loved pro wrestling. We had a few talks. What's his name? Johnny from Avenged Sevenfold.
We had him on once.
Yes, that's right. He's a big wrestling fan. I'm trying to think who else. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of us.
But it seems like there's more wrestlers that are in bands now.
That's true. That is true. You got the Butcher, you got Brody King. You know, there's a lot of guys out there that kind of come from the punk rock scene or the punk rock world that are in pro wrestling. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of them out there. I'm trying to think who else, you know, just off the top of my head. I know that there's a bunch.
Patrick L. from New Jersey says, I'm a new listener, went back and listened to just about every episode. I love the episodes where you guys did the drafts. Do you guys think you'll bring that back one day?
I think yes. I think what we should do is actually have a few guests with us, though, to do that, you know, because then I feel like it's more fun because, you know, if you're picking between four people or five people, your pick might just get stolen and then you need backup. So I think four people is probably like the most I'd want. But, you know, I feel like we know a few guys that would probably like to take part in that.
Oh, if we do, we have to bring back Dimitri Young in a heartbeat for that.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
But that was back when, you know, we had 18 guest hosts with us and it gave us something to do because it was, I'll say this a little behind the scenes. It was a little daunting when we interviewed someone and you only got two questions asked per show and it was a guy you really loved. That was the only downfall. But the benefit was when you didn't have a guest that week, you know, you'd have one topic, they all talk, and I didn't have to do any work.
Right.
So that was the only benefit of that. But we had some great guys back in the day. Sure. But yeah, I do miss the draft stuff. That the one where we drafted our own shows, that was my favorite.
Yeah, that was a good one. I did like that one. I think I picked John Moxley as my champion.
I think you did. You went more hardcore wrestling than we did. I was thinking like merch sales. I'm like John Cena. I'm right. Trying to make money. And you're like, I want this guy because he bleeds. And I want this guy because he knows how to cut that guy. And I'm like, that's awesome.
Well, I think, you know, I just have a different trip than most people. And that's what I think makes it so much more fun, you know?
Absolutely. So. Let's see here. CWF 1984 off of Reddit says, you guys have a great podcast. I make it a point to listen to every episode, regardless of who the host is and who you guys interview. Thank you guys so much. You ask different questions. How do you guys come up with your questions?
For me, it's about feeling who we're talking to, you know, cause I mean, everybody obviously brings something different to the table. You know, and I feel like, it becomes a conversation after a while. I feel like that's the one thing that we do here that, you know, I can't say that other wrestling podcasts don't do, but I know for us being fans and humanizing somebody is important. And, cause then I feel like you get to the real meat and potatoes and being someone who's been interviewed for the last 35 plus years, like, or 30 years, I should say, I always like the conversation interviews as opposed to what's your, you know, the guitar that you got to get right. A little bit more in depth. It's got to be a little bit more, you know, but yes. Well, thanks for noticing. Thank you, Continental Wrestling Federation 84.
Right? We go out of our way to make sure we ask different questions. We both listen to podcasts. We know what these guys get asked on a daily basis and we try not to, but listen, we're cutting the email segment short this week. We've got Jeff Jarrett coming on in just a second. Lars, we'll do all our promoting shit at the end. We normally try to do it now, but we don't want to keep Uncle Jeff, as PD calls him, waiting on us. So we'll be right back. We are back. Lars Fredrickson, myself, we are welcoming Jeff Jarrett back on the podcast. His official second appearance. He was here. He was actually the Wrestling Perspective's very first ever guest. It was between the time he was nominated or announced he was going in WWE Hall of Fame and right before the actual being inducted in. So, Lars, this is your first time interviewing him, my second time, and it's his first time meeting me. So,
yeah. How about? Go ahead.
No. Looking forward to it. So that would have been between January and April of 2018. Yep. My, how time flies. And here we are, February. So 5 years later. So, Lars, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm good, buddy. I'm really good. I'm happy that you're here. You know, you're one of these guys over the years that I've followed your career from the, you know, as maybe you do know, maybe you don't know, but I'm an old wrestling tape trader. And so, you know, following your career from the time that you stepped in the ring for around the first couple of times, I've watched you grow. So I'm just happy and stoked that we're both here at the same time. And welcome to the show, Mr. Jeff Jarrett. Thank you very much.
Lars, I appreciate that. I had no idea that you were a tape trader. So there is I'll just say this. There's kind of a special DNA of a tape trader because it takes it to a whole nother level. Obviously, with my, I guess you could say my family business, if you will, I could always remember getting to see tapes that my dad would have way, way back in the day from different things. And JJ Dillon would send up tapes when he managed Kamala in the early 80s. So I was 10, 12, 14 years old, but I was a big magazine guy because my dad always got the magazine. So I followed things at a really young age through magazines. I wasn't, you know, I guess I wouldn't. And then I got into the business and I wasn't trading tapes, but Jim Cornette was the first in-depth conversation I had way, way back in the day before I ever broke in. And he had just broke in about actual trading tapes. And you just hear about, wow. So you've actually got a VHS tape of Japan wrestling. That's just that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, but that's the thing. It's like for me, the magazines were always first. And I, you know, I grew up in California. So, you know, you would get a lot of the promotions. You got the AWA, you got the WWF, you got Big Time Wrestling, you know, you got Polynesian Pacific Championship Wrestling. You know, you would obviously get the Lucha stuff on, you know, the VHF channels, you know, before cable TV. And then, you know, the magazines, obviously, you would be able to follow what was happening, who the sheep herders were, who Hacksaw Jim Duggan was, you know, who DiBiase was, the New Orleans stuff, that, you know, Louisiana stuff. And then, you know, and then I would just consume it. And then when the VCR and the tape trading stuff and understanding that there was a whole other thing like Rollerball Rocco and Jumbo Saruta and, you know, and you would get all these tapes and, you know, see all these matches that in a million years being, you know, an American kid, you never thought you would ever have. So, you know, and then you would do these bigger, deeper dives, you know, you would find other guys in different areas of the country and you could get the continental stuff. You could get the Memphis stuff. You could get the Florida stuff, blah, 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 blah. Because obviously, you know, when WTBS happened, it sort of knocked down the walls and you could see guys like Magnum TA and, you know, Ric Flair on the weekly basis and, you know, whatever. But I digress. Dennis normally starts us off with the first question.
I love this kind of conversation because, sorry to cut you off there.
No.
It's one of those things. We've been around a few years, but you can have conversations. Even some guys in their 20s and 30s that know enough about the territory days and, you know, in my case, obviously there's always got to be a Memphis story, but even if it's, you know, Otto Wines, Germany, just all the different areas around the world, it's one of those things that I've often said, if you know, you know. It's one of those things. If you don't, you have no context and you know, you were introduced to the business in the Attitude Era, and which is great. It brought a ton of new fans in.
Of course.
But a lot of folks they can't even contextualize, oh wait, wrestling actually existed before Raw and Nitro, and you know that they just don't have that context. So that's where I'll often say, if you know, you know.
Yeah,
so Dennis, me and Lars took over the first 18 minutes. Would you like to join in on your show?
I went to lunch. I just got back, guys. What were we talking about?
Thanks for the invite. Okay. Yeah.
But you've been around a while and you were one of those guys that it seemed like just recently before you started your podcast where people in the industry and fans seem not to let you off the hook for things that have happened in the past or other things that they've heard through the grapevine. Now that you've got this podcast, My World with Jeff Jarrett, which I'm a fan of, it seems like a lot of that online hatred for Jeff Jarrett is slowly melting away. And I know you're one of those guys that probably doesn't give a rat's ass of what the majority of the online wrestling fans think of you. But is this kind of a change for you where you're kind of enjoying this now where fans might be a little bit more friendly towards you.
I've got kind of a different slant on this. You know, Conrad Thompson, my partner, said it really from day one. Jeff, people just don't know their story. And when they don't know their story, they really don't have a clue about who you are, you know, the personal side of you or the family side of you, or maybe even the business side of you. They just see you as whether it's Double J, Jeff Jarrett, or, you know, he laughs and cuts up, Simply Irresistible or Chosen One, whatever moniker, King of the Mountain, whatever you want to throw in here. They just kind of know you from that slant. The thing that I've used to have this conversation with Conrad and I've had with others, I got lucky, blessed, cursed, however you want to cachet it. But friend of a really early age, I mean, when I got into the business, I actually started refereeing first. So, you know, whether it's refereeing or the first, I don't know, 12, 18 months of the business, I'd go to the ring and get up in the ring and look, there's always boo birds and there would be boys, men, young men in the audience that just would cuss me out, call me everything under the sun. I mean, just like come unglued because maybe their girlfriend was cheering for me or whatever it may be. But those same guys that were on the front row or the back row or whatever, be yelling at me, they would be the ones in the parking lot wanting my autograph first. So to have kind of that context that, look, people will say one thing, but in reality, it's just human nature. So I've kind of got a crash course, whether it's a college education, a PhD, or maybe that School of Hard Knocks kind of education, just on human nature that people love to, they believe what they want to believe, regardless of the truth. That's kind of the nature, not just of a wrestling fan in all of that. So I've always taken things somewhat with a grain of salt. I do find it fascinating launching the podcast, kind of back to your point, launching the podcast. And they're like, I had no idea Jeff did this, or this. I had no idea his viewpoint. And, you know, I'll see often on Twitter, I grew up hating Jeff Jarrett. And I'm thinking, yes, that was kind of by design too. but no, it is fascinating in the world we live in, social media, God bless it. A lot of people get irritated at it, but I think you have to have a good perspective on it. I think it's an enormous asset, not just wrestling, any form of entertainment. It is a way to connect with the audience instantaneously, and it can go 24/7, 365. We didn't have that as we were, you know, talking earlier. Back in the tape Drayton days, I used to have 3 to 5 minutes on Saturday morning at Memphis TV that would bicycle around. That was really my only exposure to the fan base, and then go wrestle live. And you didn't have any personal. Now, social media, I'm at the gym, go Instagram live or whatever it may be. I can connect with the fan base instantly. That's huge.
Well, you know, I think we're roughly around the same age, and we're
you 29 too, Lars.
I'm 27, so maybe you got me beat.
Oh my gosh, I'm the old guy in the room. Okay, go ahead.
But I feel like we're kind of like that weird generation where we started performing pre-cell phone, pre-social media, but then our careers obviously took us into the world that we're living in now. As far as like, you know, the way that you've approached the business over the years, you know, there's obviously a before and after, because once now everything that we do, it can be instantaneously uploaded and seen by millions. And not only that, but there's people who will post things 3 hours before it happens. For example, like TV, like Monday Night Raw will obviously be on the East Coast before it hits me on the West Coast. But my question, I guess, is how much of that psychology in today's wrestling, do you still like, so, you know, from the past, how much of that past psychology can we bring in the modern day wrestling, in your opinion? Because you're still doing it. So, you know, how much of that past Jeff Jarrett, what you learned from at the very beginning before there was all this, do you bring in the current state?
Oh, boy, that is a loaded question. I could really, really talk a long time of that, because I think that is a very... Or for lack of a better word, I can't really come. It's a very intellectual question, because it's a thinking man's. You have to kind of think through that. I broke into the business in 86. And so it was live in Memphis, Tennessee. And so the people saw it there live, and they got to see whatever happened on Saturday morning, go down Monday night and watch the payoff or the match. Well, that same action that happened on that Saturday morning, we took that tape And 7 days later, that following Saturday morning in Nashville, Louisville, Evansville. So it's all new to, you know, it's 200 miles up the road, but they got to see it for the first time on Saturday morning. And then, you know, in Nashville's case, 8 hours later, we would have the matches in Nashville Saturday night. So in Louisville on Tuesday night. So the, I guess you could say kind of the time jump and having that emotional feel. You're talking about an East Coast, West Coast. And, you know, when we started TNA, there were some networks, and this isn't that long ago, that took episode one when we had been in business 60, 70 weeks. So, but they go back to episode one. So just kind of, more than anything, Lars, I think it really taught me that at the end of the day, you know, it's professional wrestling and that equals sports entertainment. But obviously we're not true sport, but you know, we lean into that entertainment where, you know, you can shoot a movie and it doesn't air for 2 years from now. So episodically speaking, that we are really telling a story. And if you don't have a simplistic story in our business, no matter how long the time is, it to me, it's real, really, really about storytelling. It's not so much about, although the false finishes and the ins and outs, but every match is a story in your business. Music, you can be the best instrumentalist and everything that goes with it, but if it's not really laid out in I'll call it a story, a song, but yeah, what we are is storytellers. And I think that goes with so many forms of business, not just entertainment. You know, if you're selling mortgages like Conrad, it's still a story. If you're whatever it may be. So taking what you said, you know, taken from my past, at the end of the day, we're storytellers. And I think a lot of times today, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, people want instantaneous information and they can turn on a dime because this journalist said this and this journalist said that. And all of a sudden this guy assumed this, which is totally off base. And you hear a bunch of noise. I think a lot of noise can be created in our business about nothing, speculation, and everybody dials into that. But I think as talent, as promoters, as producers, you kind of have to reel that back in and say, stay true to your story. Cause ultimately that's really what makes our world go around. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, Lars. I know that.
Yeah.
We're storytellers.
No, I 100% agree. And I'm sorry, Dennis, but let me just follow up with this just real quick. It's like, so, I mean, because Bill Apter, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, used to help you with the story and talk to the wrestlers and say, okay, I want to print a story about you and we're going to further this along in the magazines. Now, you know, you have, you know, wrestling dirt sheets and
anywhere worth going is worth going in good boots, and you can find your perfect pair at Tecovas. Tecovas crafts quality Western boots for everyone, from generational ranchers and lifelong cowboys to first-time boot buyers, which is what I was up until a couple of years ago. Growing up in Kentucky, you see boots everywhere. But I never jumped into the game until I found Tecovas, and I love it. Every one of Tecovas boots are handcrafted with over 200 meticulous steps for broken-in comfort right out of the box. Whether it's a long day or a big night, your Tecovas are built to last and impress. That's why Esquire loves them and says they're the reason we keep coming back to Tecovas. They are so comfortable. Plus, with Tecovas Best in the West guarantee, you get free returns and exchanges for 30 days. And right now, get 10% off at tecovas.com/SRS when you sign up for email and text. That's 10% off at tecovas.com/SRS. That's tecovas.com/SRS. See site for details. Tecovas, point your toes west.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We know there's power in our numbers. We've seen the impact we make when we stand together. So let's stand with candidates who represent us in Washington, D.C., not extremist Bernie Moreno. If elected, Moreno could make the Radical Project 2025 playbook a reality, endangering our democracy and our hard-won rights and freedoms. Together, we can stop Marino and his allies from reversing everything our ancestors fought for. Social Security, voting rights, and more. Sherrod Brown always stands up for the well-being of our community. Capping the price of life-saving drugs like insulin and cracking down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in black neighborhoods. Black power is in our votes. Let's use it today. Vote now to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, askmepeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
And online website storytellers, you know, and maybe some of even the wrestlers help them spill the story, right? But now it's like such an instantaneous thing, like you said. Where in your opinion is the suspension of disbelief? Where as a fan or even as a wrestler, how do you, because that information is so instantaneous these days, how do you suspend that disbelief into the actual story that you're trying to tell?
Well, I think the most recent example would be Jeff Jarrett, Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, Satnam Singh versus The Acclaim. There were some blurred lines in there. Reality-based. Truth in reality has always been. I don't know if you guys saw that Tales of the Territory episode, you know, in my Jerry Lawler and my father, Jerry Jarrett, you know, in their business office, and it goes back, and they're not the only ones, and they didn't create this. But, you know, personal issues draw money. And when you have a personal issue, it's got to be reality-based. And when you blur the lines, and to this day, there's folks that are not real sure what all lines were blurred a couple of weeks ago. So, that is, to me, if you're telling a story, if it's 100% fiction, your audience knows it. It's, to me, it truly is that simple. So you got to blur the lines.
And without giving away what was blurred and what's not, because I don't want to know. I am one of those guys that truly enjoy not knowing, and I don't read the dirt sheets. I don't read the news stuff. I just like the pure being surprised. How do you handle blurred lines in today's wrestling as compared to yesterday's wrestling?
That's a good question, because to say it's on a case-by-case basis would be an understatement. I almost think it's on a day-by-day basis, that you're really going to have to you got a vibe, you got to feel things. And I think that only comes with experience. And, you know, when you life experiences, being a part of hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of angles, I have the context of, well, this worked and this didn't work and everything in between. And so kind of feeling things out and knowing, again, you confuse them, you lose them. If you get too deep into a story and even the players in the story get confused, it's not going to work. Keep it simple. It's really the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid.
Do you find that today's modern wrestling, because there's so much to consume, in your opinion, do you think that there's too much out there and it's too much to process?
That's a good question, because when I just had this conversation this morning with some folks over in the UK, and they're not in the day-to-day wrestling, but we got into a deep discussion. And when you talk about 3 hours on Monday, 2 hours on Tuesday, 2 hours on Wednesday, 3 hours on Friday, that's just the big two. You throw in, I mean, we could pick your bunch. I mean, there's so many other promotions. That is a lot consumed. So we'll call it the casual fan, I believe the casual fan base is enormous, and people will get into the discussion, only the hardcores or this and that. Well, to me, each promotion kind of has to laser focus on, we're not going to worry about the chatter outside of us. We're going to stay in not just in our lane, but because you can throw jabs here and there and cross reference all the different promotions. Because I think if you have the mentality that you act like you're the only promotion and others don't exist, that doesn't work. But for lack of a better word, I think as each individual promotions, just stay true to your stories, your talent, your threads. And, if you don't, then kind of what you're saying, you know, there's 30 other storylines going out there. So you can really get caught up in I call it, you know, you almost get caught in the washing machine where everything goes in one thing and nothing really comes out clean. It's all one big mess. But yeah, that's a tough question, Lars, because I think in our world we live in, our phones, man, we can watch every promotion anytime we want and go back to our tape trading days. So staying focused on your own stories is a challenge in today's environment.
Me knowing Petey and knowing that you both were in the same company in 2022, and it probably would have had to blow in your mind if you would have asked you a few years ago if you and Petey Williams would be in the WWE at the same time. But you fast forward and knowing Petey, and he says there are two people in his career that he thinks more than anybody, it's you and Scott D'Amore. And you look back at the roster of people that you've put into a position today to be champions and main eventers on just about every TV program everywhere. And I don't think you get the credit that you deserve on the talent that you've brought forth into the wrestling career today. Is that something you still kind of keep your fingers in, evaluating young talent? Was it something you even still take pride in today? Or because I have to imagine you shake your head sometimes and go, man, you know, I'm just more than Jeff Jarrett on TV guy. I've had this portion and these people are cut from the Jeff Jarrett talent tree.
You know, I feel lucky, grateful, blessed, all the above. It's kind of the culture also that I was born and raised in. I mean, the Tennessee territory, socioeconomic, we couldn't compete with Charlotte or the WWF, just their dollars and cents. Texas was a lot bigger. So my father and Jerry Lawler and obviously their predecessors, they were always looking for new talent and developing new talent. And I, that whole entire learning tree was you have to have a turnover of talent. You know, it was Lawler and Dundee and maybe Dutch, but a lot of talent came through. Road Warriors, Hogan, Savage, you name it. They all came through Tennessee. But kind of the mindset of cultivating talent was in my DNA, and it still is today in ways that would probably surprise you, but it is part of who I am as far as a businessman is cultivating talent. But then you fast forward to 2002, June 19th, we launched TNA. We were the alternative at that time. You know, as Lars pointed out, there weren't cell phones and, or, you know, YouTube, it was pre-social media, pre all that kind of instantaneous information. So we, you know, the internet was just kind of getting its legs under it in a big way. So we were the alternative. And so that culture that we created, you know, that early TNA crew was kind of small. And then we grew. And then, as you know, Team Canada and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and Beer Money, just the development of talent through the years was something that was really a part of it always will be a part of my DNA. And I just kind of think as we progress along, I think the opportunities in 2023 to develop talent are more, they're out there more than ever. I mean, when I look back to, you know, on my 2022 year, and I said it a year ago this time, Effie is a really, really good talent. He took an ass kicking from the last outlaw, but no, there is so much talent on the market right now that is, I'll say, quote unquote, undiscovered. They're just looking for their opportunity. The opportunities are there because of the ability to monetize content nowadays. You can do it, Fight, FITE, the streaming service. You know, there's just so many different ways that you can monetize things. Us at AEW, I've never, ever seen a roster as deep as it is. I mean, you look and you can break it down through diversity. It's, you know, look at just, I'll just take, for example, because they're near and dear to my heart because of my lineage or my time spent in Mexico. Look at just the luchadors on the AEW roster. Then look at the female division. And then I could go on and on and on. Tag team division. It is super, super deep. And there's still talent on the market. So it's really a cool time to be in the business. I'll say that, but it's something that I guess is handed down from my dad as far as cultivating. Back to your question, answer your question. Cultivating talent is something that is something I love and will always love.
You know, after what you just said, I wanted to ask you another question, but I'm just going to ask the other question that I originally wanted to ask, even though I'm going to try to store in. TNA, when it first came out, it was like a pay-per-view kind of thing. And I think you guys did around 60 episodes, if I remember correctly.
a weekly, we ended up doing, it was, gosh, 104. Yeah.
Okay.
What did you think? But yeah, but then we went into Fox Sports, but go ahead.
Okay. So, and you know, it was 104 because I tape traded for him, but, so my question to you is coming right off the rip to the pay-per-view sort of, I guess, model, you know, with a new wrestling promotion. There must have been a lot of trepidation because, you know, it's a new company and not a lot of people maybe would know about it or whatever. You know, when you walk into that kind of situation and you're thinking about the marketing and who to bring in for these shows, it seemed like you were bringing up a lot of these guys that were maybe more on the indie scene. Was that by design?
Yeah, for sure. I've always said that the mix of the best roster is you just kind of have to have vets and primetime players and up and comers and scene stealers and everything with it. But, you know, we had a run of the Hacksaw Jim Duggins, the Road Warriors, Rick Steiner. We, you know, it was what veteran is going to show up this week. But at that very core was developing independent talent. I mean, AJ Styles was pre-launch, we wanted him, you know, and I could go down a list of other guys, Bobby Roode. I've said it on my podcast. I'll never forget me asking Scott D'Amore, did you tell me this guy had a tryout at WWE or is going to? No, he had one. I said, and they didn't sign him. He said, nope. I'm like, we want him now. You know, just that whole mentality is we have to develop our core roster. It couldn't happen overnight. I knew it wouldn't happen overnight, but yes, I wanted to develop our brand of wrestlers. And that was that, you know, we launched the X Division. I was very bullish on having diverse styles, the luchadors. I wanted Japanese style. I wanted, you know, European style, but yeah, the independent market, again, if you know, you know, the independent scene in 2002, 2003, 2004, compared to what it is now, it's not even in the same stratosphere. It's just, there is so much more work out there. Understand how much work is out there today versus that time frame. And guys that get into this industry, they got an ability to get their reps in. And I always, when they ask me, you know, advice or what do you think? I'm like, man, go get as many reps. When I broke in, I got lucky. I was doing 7 nights a week, day one. Nothing replaces reps. It never will.
Well, I mean, because it's interesting, because I'm sorry, Dennis.
It's all right.
This, you know, I saw AJ Styles and Smart Bart Sawyer at a NWA Outlaw show in Marietta, Georgia in like 1997. And
wow.
And then next thing you know, like here he is on your TV. So, and then, you know, guys like CM Punk, I mean, you basically had the who's who of professional wrestling, you know, on your shows at the very beginning, as far as the up and comers. So, you know, anyways, I digress. Dennis, sorry.
You're pushing 40 years in wrestling. And
how can you do that at 27 years old?
Well, it's a
time travel.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Time travel. Lars, I'm going to sit you down and we're going to have the adult talk here in a little bit, bud. But you're pushing 40 years in wrestling, and I've been at my real job for 22 years, and I'm a crabby, unhappy son of a bitch at the end of 22 years. How do you still do it? How do you even still want to do it? You look better now than you have 10 years ago. And you're more popular now than it seems like you're more popular now than when you were the NWA champion. You were having this, I guess, maybe an unseen renaissance in anybody's career. I don't know if there's can any of us name any wrestler that has had this sort of renaissance in his career now? Do you know what you attribute this to? Like, do you sit up at night and go, I don't get it, but here I am?
I appreciate those comments. I sincerely do. And I'll try to make the most simple, I don't think it's an answer. It's really just my response. Let me ask you a question. Is it possible to have a peak, a mountaintop without a valley? It's really not. There's no such thing as a mountaintop unless you have the valleys below it. A little over 5 years ago, it's well documented and some know and some don't know, but I went through a really, really dark time in my life. And during that time, I think it gave me a great new perspective, a new outlook. I view things differently. In a lot of ways, you know, I was, I don't want to say off the market, but, you know, I wasn't active and doing the things, but, you know, over the last couple of years, and I've documented on My World, you know, from the Hall of Fame and then working in international and the live event department of WWE and doing certain things and just kind of my life circumstances, I just made a decision about, I don't know, now it's 18 months ago that, you know what, I'm going to get in the best shape I possibly can and just see what happens. I had no plans. I had no, you know, game plan or other than today, I'm going to do everything in my power to be the best Jeff can be. And, you know, as of today, it's working out all right. I'm having a blast in the ring. If you would have told me, if I would have told you this time last year, we would all have said, what are you smoking? Are you out of your mind? But, to me, the AEW situation, and hats off to Tony Khan. He's the one, it goes without saying, he greenlit it. It's, you know, it's the Khan organization, and he greenlit the situation. And so I always said, definition of luck is when preparation meets opportunity. I feel like I was prepared. I stayed prepared. The opportunity came along, and our relationships with our core group, me and Sanjay go back 20 something years, early days of TNA, me and Jay Lethal, almost that long. The Ric Flair's last match, you know, I was a part of that behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. And it goes without saying the Nature Boy, there's only one Nature Boy, and the timing of that and everything that went down and the records and just kind of that entire weekend. It's kind of been just 2022 was just the timing of everything. For me to get the opportunity to go from Game Changer to the NWA to SummerSlam, you know, as far as, you know, being a part of that, to Ric Flair's last match, and then, you know, the Sting situation. For me and Sting to step in the ring in 2022 and the history that we've had that went back 25 years, that was surreal. So I can't put my thumb on it other than sounds old cliche-ish, but if this is a words of advice that I'm talking to myself more than anybody, get up every day and literally put your best effort, be the very best you can for that day. Good things are going to happen.
You know, I feel like we hit a certain age in our lives and we let bygones be bygones, but we also have these minds for what we do. And I know that you have an incredible mind for professional wrestling. You know, I've produced records, you know, I've done these things. And sometimes at certain points of my lifetime, it was very hard for me not to give my opinion. And it sounds like through your process where you're at now, you've sort of realized that sometimes it's better to sit there and look stupid than open your mouth and say something stupid, right? So please feel free to borrow that if you want.
I will.
Well, you do it all the time, friend. So, you know, that's where I came up with it. But my I guess my point is like, you know, you've been with every single company and you sort of have a really good idea how things should work. Is it hard for you at this point in your life, even with all this sort of introspection that you've done, this dark time that you went through, is it hard for you to keep your trap shut? Or do you sit there and just say, well, you know what? They're going to figure it out.
My friend, I think me and you both can relate to this. Experiences, if you really focus on learning from your experiences, and I went a lot of years that had a lot of experiences, and I'd never stopped to process and say, what can I learn from that? And now, what role did I have in either making that a success or a failure? Probably more importantly, as a failure. You know, what our ego likes to tell us is, if it went great, I get all the credit. If it went bad, somebody else screwed up. It's really the opposite. You know, what is my role in it? And I just think with those experiences come wisdom. And when you begin to really process things and get a little bit wiser and get a little bit wiser, you learn to understand, for the most part, if somebody comes to you and asks advice, it's a completely different set of circumstances other than if you walk into a situation and say, hey, folks, let me tell you what you're doing wrong. That never works, ever works. So a guy that comes up to me or whatever, if somebody's wants to engage, I'm more than willing to ask, ask questions first, then give some advice. I don't ever give advice without kind of understanding more of the situation, but experience does that. I'm a better father that way. I was a hellion as a kid. I raised hell, you know, but my parents were divorced, but I put both of them through hell. And as I look back on things, at the end of the day, we want to do it our way. And, you know, life is just that way. You just kind of have to have some experiences. You got to have some failures, learn from those failures, pick yourself up. But Lars, you said it well. It takes real wisdom to just keep your mouth freaking shut and just let things happen, because a lot of times, like you said, they'll end up coming back around and saying, hey, what do you think? And then they've got some experience under their belt of things not going right, then they're much more open to learning.
I know we've got to wrap this podcast up, and Lars and I each have one more question. And I've always wanted to ask someone this, as one of the old school guys, maybe even a gatekeeper of the industry before they let anybody in, you had to pass our Noah wrestler and he had to give you the green light, and then maybe you could get into the industry. We're in this new age where there's media scrums. Everybody has podcasts. And you be an old school guy where you had to keep your mouth shut. Secrets were secrets. People got kicked out of the industry for talking. Now, here we are with podcasts and you're telling stories. Is there ever a part of you that feels conflicted? Like maybe even though the doors blown wide open on the wrestling industry, that, boy, you know, part of me was raised not to talk about this. And here I am talking about this.
I got a couple of different ways to take this, but it's almost like, you know, do you really want to spit in the wind? Are you really going to fight progress? Are you really going to try to pay the basketball analogy? Do you really want to go out and run an offense on basketball and act like the 3-point line doesn't exist? If you do, you're going to get your brains beat out, because they go down to the other court and the other guys, they're bombing threes and scoring. And so all of a sudden they're getting 3 points for every time they score, you're getting two. It doesn't work. So, you know, we can choose to fight the evolving times or not. But what has become a real revelation, and I don't know if I'm can articulate this right, is that the more and more people think they understand and know the business, for me, and I keep my mouth shut, but it's more and more and more and more and more and more, and did I say more and more? A enormous red light that they don't know what in the hell they're talking about. Yeah, they just don't. So I'm not saying just journalists. It can be talent, journalists, whatever. When they think they've really got it all figured out, they just don't, because there's a few things in this business that only experience teaches you. And at the very end of it, and that's something that, you know, the Last Outlaw, you know, I'll say Double J, King of the Mountain, Chosen One, we're in a lot of ways, we're all extensions of my personality. The Last Outlaw is without question an extension of my personality. And I'm going back to what Lars said, you know, just keeping your mouth shut, because most of the time folks will flap their gums, there'll be a slappy, and then you know exactly how to checkmate them.
I guess if I had a last question, you know, I always come from this place of like, what have I experienced? You know, because I think we try to find the humanity, you know, as pro wrestling fans on this podcast. Knowing what you've gone through, is there a certain amends for you to a person, place, thing, whatever it is, that still needs to happen, as far as all your years, all your time, all your mistakes, all your triumphs, failures, whatever. No one learns anything by winning. We all know that. But is there an amends that you still need to make?
You know what? It's a word that is often spoken. We can call it recovery or however you want to cash it. But to me, it's really in life. It's that living amends. Mm-hmm. that I can talk is cheap. Actions speak so much. It's a total understanding. Actions speak louder than words. But it's that living amends. And if I do the next right thing day in, day out, and I mean, you know, character is defined when you do the right thing when nobody's looking. And so that to me is in the real DNA of who I am, that no matter who I'm dealing with, if I'm dealing with an audio grip on a set, don't disrespect him. If I'm dealing with the boss, the boss's boss, the boss's boss, you got to have respect. You got to have that integrity all day, every day. And that living amends of being the person that you know, I don't want to be who I am today, tomorrow. I want to get a little bit better, a little bit better. That to me is the amends that I live, because I went for so many years in this industry. It's just kind of the nature of the beast in entertainment, you know, me, grab, grab, grab. It's all about me. It's all about my ego. The world's going to revolve around me. And that takes you to death, you know, maybe not physical death, but certainly emotional and spiritual and mental death. But that living amends is how I live my life.
Anytime I hear about you from PD, he calls you Uncle Jeff. One day, maybe Lars and I will be able to call you Uncle Jeff.
Anytime. But
I've got one last request before we send you on your way. Will you please call Lars Fredriksson Slap Nuts for me? Because I can't talk trash to him. He's way more famous than I am. You are way more famous than he is. Just for me. Just
No. I can't respect Lars. I can't call slap ass Lars a slap nut. That wouldn't be fair. You have to call him a slap ass. It's much more dignified. There you go. He's got the double J up.
See, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I just got slap nuts and slapped ass from double J.
There you go. I love it.
But see, my guitars are real though, bro.
I won't no part of your guitars. Trust me.
My World podcast, go out, watch it. AEW Wednesday nights. Check your local listings for times. Jeff Jarrett, thank you so much for coming back on this podcast. Almost 5 years to the day that you were on last time.
Time flies. Hey guys, all kidding aside, I'm glad we got this schedule, got to do it. Enjoy life, folks. We only get to live it once.
Thank you so much.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com. This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.